Welcome, everyone, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Short, and joining me, as always, is Jake Barnett. We are here for your SmackDown audio review. Jake and I get together every Saturday to provide this audio review of the WWE SmackDown show to you, but it is not the only audio that's produced here each week for .net. And in fact, we're coming off the tail end of a huge week of audio. There has been a ton of audio created this week. We have all the normal stuff, the WWE Raw audio review, the TNA Impact Wrestling audio review, as well as Jake and Will Pruitt's .net countdown, where they get together and look at the best and the worst professional wrestling each week. Jason Powell has his Q&A audio up, where he answers members both wrestling and non-wrestling questions. I have my audio slant up this week, talking about Ring of Honor's one-year anniversary of being under Sinclair. It's been a little over a year, actually, since they were purchased, but they celebrated the one-year taping of their, or the one-year anniversary of their first television taping this past week, so I talk about that. As well as several interviews this week, I have a 27-minute interview up with the Ring of Honor World Champion, Kevin Steen. Jason Powell speaks with former WWE creative member, Court Bauer. So just a ton of audio for you guys this week. And, of course, our flagship show, which Jason and I do every Thursday, .net Weekly, is a news review show. Look at all the news of the week, often break news that's not even made its way to the site yet. So just tons of audio each and every week, and everything we've done in the past, all those interviews, the Kevin Steen interview, the Court Bauer interview, as well as interviews with Brock Lesnar, Chris Jericho, and many others, also still available on the site. If you would like access to all of that audio, as well as access to the ad-free version of the site, the .net member forum, or the .net member blog section, all you need to do is become a .net member. Simply head on over to ProWrestling.net, click on the right-hand side of the page for the .net member sign-up link. Click there, and we will get you started. $7.50 a month if you take the monthly option. If you know you want to be a .net member for a year, we will knock $2 off each month. Make it $5.50 a month when you take that annual option. So as soon as you're done listening to this audio, if you like what you hear, head on over and become a .net member today and get access to all of that audio. Sure, check out the interview with Kevin Steen. I thought it went pretty well. But, Jake, we are here with the first SmackDown after SummerSlam. Of course, as far as SmackDown's concerned, the big news coming out being that Sheamus, still the World Heavyweight Champion, though with much controversy that, of course, played out some more on Raw with Alberto Del Rio and Randy Orton. We got more of that here this week. We got lots of replay videos of what happened with CM Punk and John Cena on Monday night, as well, of course, with Brock Lesnar and Triple H, everything that kind of went down with that. So a lot going on, but overall, you know, I thought we had a show that dragged on. You were not able to do coverage Friday night. I was the only one doing it, but I know sometimes it's a little different when you're watching it but not having the cover. But for me, the show seemed to drag on. The only real high spot of the show was the end. When, and I don't mean that in a funny way of going, the best part was when it was over. The only real, you know, the big newsworthy moment, of course, was that Alberto Del Rio defeats Randy Orton. He's still the number one contender. But I think, you know, for me, had Randy Orton not tapped out clean, which is the hugest news, I think, coming out of this, this show would have been a huge bust. I know you watched it without covering. What did you think of the show overall? What did you think about Randy Orton tapping clean?
Yeah, that was, you know, legitimately surprising in a good way. You know, it's nice when you see a heel go over clean on WWE TV. It's so rare that it completely catches you off guard, and that was definitely what that moment was. But the rest of the show was all over the place. I mean, I think a lot of these SmackDown stories are just kind of on life support right now. They've been carrying them over, you know, forward from a month or two ago in a lot of cases, and they're just not dramatic or compelling stories. So, I think a lot of this show suffers just because the writing has been pretty lackluster lately. And even the main event storyline, I mean, aside from Orton tapping out, there really isn't a whole lot to sink your teeth into there anymore. I mean, they're doing their best to keep it fresh with adding Orton and Ziggler to the mix. But the Sheamus and Del Rio storyline still feels like it's, it needs to go away as quickly as possible.
Yeah, everything's very thin, I think, might be the best way to describe what's going on. And I think what you were kind of alluding to there with the writing, with the storylines, there's a lot going on, but nothing has any substance. There's no real mass. You know, I took a writing course, a creative writing course. One of the things that the instructor talked about was things having mass. She specifically talked about as you travel through your story, you have an idea of where your story is going to end, and yet sometimes as you write, the story gains mass, and if you know anything about science, mass creates gravity, and you know, gravity can pull you in a different direction from where you thought the story was going to end. And, you know, I'm not getting into the, you know, the... is this the right story? Is the wrong story for WWE right now? My point is that nothing, none of these threads have any real mass to them. They have no real gravity to either pull the story forward or really to pull us into the story. And, you know, that's one of the things that story mass, that gravity she was talking about did. It pulls readers in. And in this case, you know, for people watching these shows and trying to find a story to sink their teeth into, there's just nothing there to do. It's you know, we've got, you know, Jinder Mahal and Ryback had a match that played off of their story, but that story's not been very great because of how bad Mahal's been. And Del Rio and Orton and Sheamus have a story, but Sheamus is kind of stale and bland, and Del Rio's been misused and has gotten stale and bland, and Orton just came back, and Orton's, you know, kind of, in my opinion, standard walking around situation is kind of stale and bland, and you know, so everything, nothing really has any great juice or gravity, however you want to look at it, to really hook you in. But I want to go back again to the Orton thing tapping out. You know, we of course get the spoilers. I look at the spoilers because sometimes it affects what we talk about on .NET Weekly on Thursday. But I try to keep my knowledge of spoilers down to just match results. It's kind of like, you know, I'm doing an iPay-per-view for the local indie group this weekend. And if you're hearing this, and it's still Saturday, just a quick plug, Pro Wrestling Evo doing their next iPay-per-view, evoondemand.com, $9.99 is the price. Great four-way match for the championship that includes a guy, Casey McKnight, who was headed to WWE developmental in just a couple of weeks. So if you've got some time this evening, be sure to check that out. But, you know, I'm doing that pay-per-view, and I don't want to know the planned finishes. I don't want to know, unless there's something specific that I have to, you know, get over on commentary, I don't want to know what's going on so that my reactions are legitimate. It's kind of the same way when I call or when I cover a show for the site. And so I knew Del Rio had won, but I had no idea that Orton was going to tap out. And, you know, Del Rio locks on the cross arm breaker in the match, and I'm like, okay. And Orton kind of fought him on it, and, you know, I'm waiting for, you know, then he finally gets it locked in, and I'm waiting for Orton to roll up whatever he's going to do. And then the bell rings, and I thought, I'm hearing things. I'm hearing bells in my ears. That's terrible. But the match was over. Do you think that? I mean, there was no real interference. Granted, you know, Del Rio was being the heel and did heel moves, but there was nothing really screwy about this. It was kind of middle of the ring tap out. You know, Del Rio, one of the things that made him so good on the front end, I know a lot of people didn't like him at the beginning, but, you know, one of the things that did work for him is that he was a nasty dude, and he went over clean a lot. And, you know, he hurt Mysterio very early, and as far as storyline and those sorts of things. Is this what they need to do to him, is just make him a legitimate badass again, or is there more that needs to be done to fix Del Rio, who just seems adrift right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think most of the problem, I mean, for me personally, and it has been that he's just taken so many losses, and he never looks like a credible threat. So I think, you know, a few major wins could definitely, you know, improve my perception of him, and I'm sure other people's as well. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be, you know, a panacea where all of a sudden all of his problems disappear, because I still think he struggles a bit on the microphone. He seems to, you know, kind of meander a bit and lose his place, you know, more often than not. So, you know, there are some things that he needs to work on other than, you know, picking up some wins. But I do think it would definitely make him seem like more of a credible threat to Sheamus' title, which, because I think a lot of this, you know, when this feud started a few months ago, it just seemed like a foregone conclusion what was going to happen. And you know, that definitely takes away from the story.
Yeah, I liked his character at the beginning. I thought he had, you know, people were like, he's Mexican JBL. Okay, but, you know, there's so many things we see redone. I mean, just, you know, for example, within this, But in this show, we have the whole Cobra thing going on with Santino. Well, the Cobra is just Mr. Socko, folks. I mean, you know, you see the same things over and over and over again. It's what happens in wrestling. It's, you know, in a lot of cases, it's fine because these are good stories that can be told. And in other cases, it's laziness. So, you know, I liked him from the beginning. I thought he had a good look. I liked everything about him. And, of course, they made him credible. And then, you know, after that first, you know, run at the title with Edge around Edge's retirement and how he kind of looked rough around that. And it just was downhill from there. And he's not evolved. And in the opening segment, which we'll talk about here in just a minute, I thought that he rambled a little bit on the mic. He seemed to be going back to the same stuff. So he's got some more work to do to fix his character. I think we agree on that. But this is a great way to do it. Randy Orton tapping clean is not something. If you had told me that going in, I would have gone, yeah, I think you misread the spoilers. It's just, there's no way Orton just taps clean in the middle of the ring. That's completely impossible. The other big singles news in here, Sheamus was in a match with Dolph Ziggler, and Ziggler almost cashes in a couple of times, once in the middle of the show, once at the very end, gets stopped by Randy Orton at the end so that he gets to hit the RKO and send the crowd home happy. Are they doing damage to him much the same way with Ziggler, or do you think that this isn't as big of a deal? I mean, he beats up Sheamus with the briefcase, starts to cash in, but Sheamus recovers in time, and Ziggler's able to get away. And then we get the almost cash in again at the end. Of course, this time Orton makes a save instead of Sheamus. You know, sometimes these teases to cash in work really well for a guy. Sometimes they don't. Where are you on Ziggler right now? Do you think they're hurting him by having him almost cash in all these times and being foiled? Or do you think that they're telling a good story here?
You know, it's interesting because I just think it's, but you know, the more exposure he gets with these main event talents, even if he's, you know, taking an RKO or you know, cheating to win, or you know, whatever he's doing, you know, getting himself disqualified by hitting Sheamus with the briefcase, I think the more exposure and the more time he spends, you know, with the main event stars, I think, you know, the more mind share he consumes, you know, with fans. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I mean, obviously, if they, you know, if they spam the teased button, you know, if they continue to have him out there once or twice a SmackDown, you know, trying to cash in but constantly getting foiled, you know, eventually it'll hurt him. But I, you know, if they're, you know, kind of judicious about how they go about doing the teases, I think it helps him. And I don't necessarily think he loses anything, you know, when he takes an RKO or a brogue kick or something, you know, to sell kind of a tease. I think it helps, you know. He just needs the exposure, and the more time he's on television, I think the better it is for him.
Yeah, I agree. Number one, the guy, you know, sells like, I mean, I think he's the best seller alive today. He gets in the ring and makes everybody look like $1 million. I could throw a punch, and you guys would think I was a total badass if Ziggler sold it for me. I mean, he's just that good, and so he's able to show that sort of thing off when this happens, and I don't think it's hurting him in any way because he is getting closer. And as long as he ultimately cashes in, which I do think he will be successful when he cashes in, I think they burned, you know, they needed to burn a person to get past that everybody who wins the Money in the Bank goes on to win the championship. They needed to have at least one person drop that. And they did the right thing with Cena. Cena has the heat or the shine, if you consider him a baby face, whatever. To burn up there, and they did it, you know, with Big Show, so he didn't really lose. He was kind of screwed out of the deal, and so on and so forth. So, I mean, they got past that, and I think they did that, you know, they did it the smart way with Cena. They did it with a guy who could afford the loss and absorb it and move on. And you know, they still point it out, but it's always, you know, it just doesn't seem like a big deal. It's like, oh, Cena lost, yeah, but it's Cena. So, I mean, they did a good job of that. And I do think that Ziggler is going to cash in successfully, ultimately. And as long as that's where they go, I think all of this just kind of builds to that moment. So, and if you remember, or if you're about to become a member, be sure to check out the Dolph Ziggler thread in the forum right now about his dating Amy Schumer. That thing has been hilarious and has taken off on several different rants and arguments, but it was interesting to hear how people, you know, talked about him dating this, you know, this comic and whatnot. I just thought it would be an interesting article. But let's go through this show, Jake. It was the August 24th edition of SmackDown. It was taped on August 21st in Bakersfield, California. We get a video that recaps everything that happened at SummerSlam with Del Rio and Sheamus, the foot on the rope, as well as how Del Rio and Orton ended on Raw with another foot on the rope, but Sheamus getting involved that time. So we go straight in. The show opens cold. Randy Orton's music hits. Michael Cole checks in on commentary. He was the only voice we heard, and we'll get to more about that as we go along. Orton comes to the ring, cuts a promo, really a heel promo. We talk about this a lot with Orton, how you know his promos are very paint by numbers when they're babyface, or they're you know if there's any more expansion on them at all, they're very heel in their tendencies. And this one I thought was a lot like that. He's like, you know, you got screwed, Del Rio. Guess what? Too bad. And all those sorts of things. I mean, just a real kind of heelish attitude to take. Yes, he was talking to the heel, and that kind of makes it babyface. But if you go back and listen to that and drop a name out of it, he sounds like a bad guy talking. But he did say it was too bad that Del Rio thought that his loss on Raw was tainted or his loss at SummerSlam was tainted. He said that he won that match. He deserves to face Sheamus at Night of Champions. He said there's some people on Twitter who disagree with him, and I think he was referring to Ricardo Rodriguez. I didn't know exactly who he was talking about. But he dared any of those people who actually disagreed with him to come out and say it to his face. At that point, Sheamus' music hit. He comes to the ring. He said he wasn't out there to disagree with Orton. He said Del Rio had many chances and had blown every single one of them. He said that he agreed that Orton should be the first person in line to face him, and not only did he agree that he should be, he wanted to face him for the World Heavyweight Championship. And the crowd got hot for that. They kind of got in each other's faces and nodding and posing and all that. Booker T's music hits at that point. He comes to the ring in his suit. He says that he goes, are we talking about something huge here? Are we talking about Sheamus versus Randy Orton for the World Championship? And the place got hot again. He goes, do you guys want to see that? And he says, well, that's big news, but we got to talk about what happened on Monday, Randy. And that's as far as it got when Del Rio cuts him off. No music for Del Rio this time. He just comes out with a mic screaming and hollering. He gets in the ring and just kind of goes nuts for a minute. He starts freaking out about, what happened. He calls Sheamus a criminal and a cheater. He calls Orton a snake. He talks about having, how he was cheated from his win. The referee screwed him at SummerSlam. He called Sheamus a cheater and a criminal again for stealing his car. He said maybe Booker T was just like Sheamus, a criminal and a cheater. And that was kind of what I was talking about with Booker with Del Rio. He kept coming back to this criminal and cheater again and again and again. It just seemed to be like his go-to line. Called Booker T a criminal cheater. Just Booker T tried to explain a few times what was going on, but Del Rio kept cutting him off and freaking out. Finally, Booker T says, if you'll just let me finish, you know, what I was going to say was, Randy, we have to talk about what happened on Monday. You know, you'll always have a place in line because you have the credentials and the resume to have a place in line for the world title. But after what happened, the number one contender, the next person in line, is Alberto Del Rio. Del Rio smiled and clapped and, you know, good decision and that sort of thing. And Booker T paused for just a moment and then said, that was until you came out here running your mouth and flapping your gums. He said now, instead, they were going to have a rematch for Monday night. It would be Alberto Del Rio versus Randy Orton again, and the winner would be the number one contender. He did the "Can you dig that sucker" line to Del Rio, and then left the ring. Del Rio also left and left Sheamus and Orton standing in the ring in the opening segment. I thought everybody was okay here. It didn't do a whole lot to set me on fire. It wasn't the most engaging and entertaining moment. It wasn't terrible. But, you know, everybody was all right here. Del Rio was the only guy who I thought that, again, kind of rambled a little bit, but he also had the most words. I mean, he had a lot to say. They had to go on and on and on. And maybe the repeating of the lines is for effect because, you know, you get somebody who's enraged and just kind of shooting from the hip that they tend to say the same things over and over again. But, I mean, I like how they got to the match. It was... But again, everybody's just so thin and boring or abused at this point that it's hard to invest in this storyline as a whole. But what did you think of the opening segment?
I mean, it was fine for what it was. I mean, they tend to try to cram as much star power in the ring to open the show as they can, and you know, Sheamus and Orton and Booker and Del Rio out there definitely, you know, kind of gives things a major show feel. So in that sense, I thought it was a success. But yeah, Orton, the promo wasn't spectacular. He never really reaches, kind of above his standard, and that really kind of bums me out about him. You know, it seemed like he was on such a crazy trajectory just a few years ago, where he was just improving so rapidly, and kind of becoming his own star. And he's kind of plateaued since then, and I keep waiting for him to kind of reach a little bit higher, but it just hasn't happened recently. And, Sheamus is what he is. I mean, for me, I dislike, Sheamus as world champion right now, simply because I just don't think his character is deep enough to support, world title feuds. You know, I just don't think he's dynamic enough as a character to really, put over a major heel. It just seems like he's got one gear, and that's just kicking the crap out of people and doing the Lucky Charms bit, that's kind of the limits of the Sheamus character, and I wish that wasn't the case. I think he was a much deeper and a much more interesting character when he was a heel. Seemed like he had a lot more interesting things to say, but Del Rio has similar problems. He seems to be kind of stuck in one gear. He seems to bring out the same insults week after week, no matter who he's talking to. So, the segment was okay. I mean, it was delivered fine, but the characters involved for me, I mean, I'm just not into these guys, like I feel like I should be for a main event storyline. So, maybe that clouds my perceptions, but, the delivery was okay, but the characters just don't interest me like I hope they would.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page there. It's really funny that WWE, the one thing I hated about them as a kid growing up, for those who, for new listeners, I am the old NWA, WCW, Jim Crockett Promotions guy. I grew up in the 80s here in the South, and one of the things I hated about WWF back then was just their ridiculous characters. And it seems impossible that all these years later that WWE's problem is that their characters are so ridiculously thin and not impressive anymore. That's really the problem. Storyline, I think the writers occasionally come up with pretty good storylines. This storyline in and of itself is not so bad. You just don't have the characters to get it over anymore. And that seems just impossible to me, considering, how just over-the-top and ridiculous their characters were back in the 80s and how they put so much. And back in the 80s, when you look at it, that's all they had. They didn't really have great stories. It was just these larger-than-life characters that people could get behind. And I'm not advocating a return to the kind of mindless wrestling like we had from them back then with just these huge characters, but to strike a nice balance and really flesh out their guys a whole lot more. Michael Cole sitting at the announce table alone on commentary, and he talked about Josh Matthews getting killed by Kane. They even showed a video of it. And they showed the tweet that Josh Matthews sent out saying that, he's injured because I got hit by a Mack truck. He'd be back next week. And then he closed on the tweet with, "This has to end." And AJ, I think either if it was during the pay-per-view or during Raw on Monday, there was this, AJ's going to address what happens with announcers getting hurt and something has to be done. Where do you think they're going with that? I mean, we usually don't like the fantasy book, but I don't have a good feel. I do think that's for a purpose, obviously, but I just don't have a good feel of where they're going. It also makes me nervous for tonight because, as I've joked before, every time a WWE announcer gets beat up, there tends to be something that happens with me at an Evo show. Last time Josh Matthews got beat up, I ended up kicked in the back of the head, so I'm a little nervous tonight. But where do you think they're going with this announcer thing, or do you think they're not going anywhere with it? It's just, you know, it's just what Matthews put out.
I don't know. Yeah, they seem to have, you know, quite a few layers of stories. You know, a lot of the time, you know, things that, you know, they do on Twitter, you know, and other forms of social media don't always make it on television, or, you know, they make it on Superstars or you know, some other, you know, television or online, you know, feud development. But, you know, it's hard to say where exactly they're going. I mean, it seems like it would interface with whatever they're doing with Daniel Bryan and Kane and AJ, or maybe they're trying to, you know, try to sow a little dissension among the ranks already about AJ as general manager. I'm not sure, but it, you know, you hope when they, you know, when they put something up like that, they plan on following up on it. But it's not always 100% confidence that you can say that when it comes to WWE and their storyline. So I'm not sure. It could change by Monday. Who knows?
Ryback makes his ring entrance, and after commercial, Teddy Long has joined Michael Cole on commentary. Teddy Long told Cole that there would be a different announcer out there for every single match, and that Cole needed all the help he could get. Ryback cuts a two-second promo where he says that, you know, basically he's going, you know, feed me more, and Jinder Mahal is his next meal. Jinder makes his ring introduction for our first match of the night, Ryback defeating Jinder Mahal in 2 minutes and 48 seconds. Pretty much so, there's 2 minutes of Cole and Long and Teddy Long just bickering like hell at ringside and arguing and fighting, and not in the good way, not in the, you know, the Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan sort of way of bickering, just that, you know, pain in the ass Michael Cole bickering that we get. Mahal got in some offense, but, you know, Ryback pretty much just powered back. Even to the silly point where Mahal's stomping him on the ground, Ryback just grabs his foot, stands up, beats the guy to death. The crowd starts chanting, "Feed me more," all by themselves, and he hits his big clothesline and his finisher for the win. The end of the Ryback and Jinder Mahal feud. That's the best part of this, is these two guys both get to move on. If you know, I think there's money in Jinder Mahal. I think they need to work on him. I think he's got a great look. He's a big guy. I think he's a natural heel. And so this, you know, this could have been a good feud had they not just abused Jinder Mahal so bad. But I, you know, right now Ryback is a bust. He's impressive. The fans are chanting with him, but he's still, you know, to me, the "feed me more" chants are just replacement for Goldberg chants. That's all they are. They're still functionally the same thing. People still think of him as this Goldberg type character, and I don't think anybody's buying it. Are you buying it?
Well, it's definitely, you know, not as exciting as it once was. I mean, you know, when Goldberg kind of hit the scene and started, you know, having success with the streak, it was original and it was different. And, you know, he looked the part. And you know, I'm not saying that Ryback doesn't. I just mean, you know, we've seen stuff like this before. And, you know, they're not really doing enough to separate the two. I mean, they, you know, swapping out a catchphrase and having him wear a different singlet and, you know, giving him, you know, some different lines and whatnot. I mean, it just feels like a repeat, you know. And we already have enough, you know, reboots and you know, repeats of old gimmicks on WWE TV, you know. At some point, it has to, you know, stop being an homage and it just becomes recycled. And that's not good, and I think that's kind of where they're heading, you know, with Ryback at this point. And Mahal, you know, he started out really promising, you know, not when we first saw him debut on SmackDown. And, you know, he quickly became a caricature, and that's a bummer, because I was hoping they were going to try to, you know, do something different with him besides, you know, generic racial character number 22 that, you know, goes out there with a turban and antagonizes people. I was hoping we were going to get something a little bit more, you know, dynamic and different from him, but that hasn't been the case so far. So I hope they give him a chance to do something, because it seems like he's legitimately talented.
Yeah, if you're planning on watching through or fast-forwarding through the show after listening to our audio or whatever, just watch Jinder take the finisher. I mean, he sells it like he was shot. I was kind of laughing about that. He just let Ryback kill him on the finisher. It was great. After commercial, we did get our first commercial for the Saturday Morning Slam. It looks as cheesy as I would expect it to be, but I do think it will be effective for that age group of boys that they're targeting. It looks to be set up nicely, and it debuts, well, probably by the time you hear this, it will have already debuted in most markets. So it does debut today on the CW every morning. I think it's 10 Eastern, 9 Central is what time it comes on. We get a video of Caitlyn winning the Battle Royal on Raw to become the number one contender for the Divas Championship. Alicia Fox is in the ring waiting. Layla makes her ring entrance. Caitlyn is on commentary for our second match of the night. Layla defeating Alicia Fox at 2:06 in probably the worst wrestled match of the night, and that's not a knock on the ladies, just the psychology of the match was terrible. It's pretty much all Alicia Fox for a full 2 minutes. She does like the Matrix duck of a clothesline, turns around, Layla hits a very weak-looking roundhouse kick a la CM Punk, and that's it. That's enough to beat Layla. She covers her, gets the three count, and the match is over. And I thought, wow, who knew Layla had such strong kicks? And it was on her injured leg that had her out for so long, the bad knee. And that's where they were going in the match. Alicia Fox was working that knee. And then Layla kicks her with that leg and just knocks her out. And I thought, wow, that's really bizarre. After the match, Caitlyn gets in the ring. Her and Layla both look at the Divas title, and then they shake hands and hug. Eve's music hits at this point. She comes out dressed in street clothes. She's in a white dress and gets in between them, looks at both of them, kind of smiles, and then grabs each of them's hands and holds it up in the air and smiles real big for the crowd. We'll talk more about Eve as we go along. I really like what they're doing with her. And this was just, at first I was confused, but then as we see what happens with her later in the show, it starts to make more sense. I don't know what they see in Caitlyn. I do think they're about to put the title on Caitlyn. I feel like they're pulling the trigger. Layla's had her run. It's not been very impressive. And Caitlyn's going to be who they put it on. She doesn't impress me much, and I don't think her look is that great. They're not an attractiveness scale, just her look in the ring as a character. But I don't know. What did you think? I mean, did you find that kick in as bizarre as I did?
Yeah, it was very strange because up until that point, like you mentioned, I mean, Alicia was dominating the match. But not only that, but she didn't even appear winded or injured or anything. It was just, it was just a full stop, one kick and lights out. I mean, obviously, that happens in, reality if you were to be in a fight, but it just felt strange, given how weak it looked on television. I can understand if it would look like a pretty stiff kick and, game over. But, that was definitely bizarre. And Caitlyn, I don't know, if she was on commentary, like you mentioned, and she really, I don't know if they were barking in her ear on the headset or what was going on, but she definitely struggled to find words while she was out there. So hopefully that part of her game improves because, if the expectation is that she's going to hold the title and maybe fall into a feud right away, it'll be difficult for her to succeed if she has trouble on the microphone. But the overall indication that I got, I picked up is that they're moving on from Layla. I guess that experiment didn't work.
We get our commercial, and afterwards we get a recap, the replay of CM Punk and John Cena from the end of Raw. Just real quick, I really liked what we got from John Cena. I mean, that night, no, on Thursday when we talked about it with Jason even called it good John Cena. And, I didn't like what happened with CM Punk and Jerry Lawler at the end. But the exchange between those two I thought was very good. I thought Cena took everything well from CM Punk and then came back and delivered his stuff pretty well. And if you remember, you can get all my thoughts on that in the Raw audio for this week. But just real quick, your thoughts on the CM Punk and John Cena angle for Monday night.
Well, I thought Punk logically made a lot more sense than Cena did. And Will and I spoke about it on the countdown kind of at length. And, I think Cena talked about respect quite a bit, and that was really the central theme of the conversation or, argument or whatever you want to call it that they had on Monday was was respect, and CM Punk kind of made his case that he's been, you know, champion for 9 continuous months. He's undefeated in title matches, and you know, he feels like he's earned the respect of you know, John Cena and everybody else, because, you know, he's beaten Cena several times and everything else along the way. So you know, I thought he made a good case. Cena, you know, kind of made the case that he, you know, his respect isn't based on championships. You know, he has a bond with his fans that transcends titles, and it's a special relationship to him. And that part I liked. But then, you know, the end of the conversation, he kind of completely flipped that on its head and said that, you know, if Punk doesn't challenge him for the title, you know, in his house in Boston at Night of Champions, that Punk has no respect for himself, and he has no respect for the title, which I found bizarre, because, you know, a guy who had just kind of spent you know, a good amount of time making some sense, saying that, you know, his respect isn't based on titles, then said that, you know, Punk had to would only earn his respect by defeating him in a title match. I don't know. I thought that was kind of a strange logical scenario that he put himself into. He kind of contradicted himself at the end. But overall, I liked what Punk and Cena were able to accomplish. I think they worked really well together. But I wish Cena as a character was more kind of in touch with with himself. It seems like at times he just thinks he can cluster and say whatever he wants regardless of logic, and people will buy it. And I thought he had some holes there.
All right, there you go. Here we go. Dolph Ziggler and Vicky Guerrero backstage talking about Ziggler beating Jericho, when he should cash in the briefcase, complaining about AJ making him put the briefcase on the line. And they're going round and round. Vicky said, "I'll take care of AJ. You just worry about when you're going to cash in the contract." At that point, Sheamus walks up and says, "There's no time like the present to cash in." They bickered back and forth for a moment. Ziggler says, "Don't worry, I'll know when to cash in the championship. I'll decide when it's time. And if you happen to be the champion when I do that, you'll never see it coming." Teddy Long walks up at that point and tells them that, maybe I misunderstood this, did he tell them that they were booked in a match at that point, or that he was going to talk to Booker T about booking them in a match?
I believe he said he was going to recommend Booker T put them in a match. I don't think he has any booking authority.
Okay. All right. I thought he was delivering a message, but this is a little bit later in the show. I think right after the commercial we get, you know, it's official these two were going to be in a match, and I thought, I must have missed that when he first said it. I thought he said that they were booked in a match. But we get this little backstage segment with Ziggler and Vicky. It's good mic work for Ziggler. We need to hear more mic work from him, and he did a fine job here. Again, this goes back to the same thing at the very beginning. The characters are so thin, and I like Ziggler a whole lot. I mean, I really want this guy to win. I think that him is I think once they put the title on him and let some baby faces, you know, chase him, I think they're going to see really clearly what they have in him. And I think the fans will too. So, I mean, this wasn't great stuff, but it wasn't terrible either. I mean, you know, Sheamus came up, and he wasn't so much Lucky Charms, but he was the badass, and I think he's better in that role. So this was okay for me backstage. What do you think?
Yeah, I liked it. You know, I like these two whenever they get in the ring together. I think they're great. You know, I mean, it gets to be kind of rinse and repeat because we've seen it so much lately. But, you know, I think those two could have a pretty good feud if given the opportunity and a little bit of build. You know, I wouldn't go back to it right away, but, you know, in this scenario, I thought they did a pretty good job. You know, and I think Ziggler is starting to come into his own as a character. You know, he definitely, like you said, needs more mic time, and he needs, you know, more time to relate to fans. I mean, people don't really know what his motivation is. They don't know who, you know, he is, you know, as a personality. I mean, he gets so little time to talk, and all they ever really let him talk about is, you know, being a show off and whatnot. So I want to know why, you know, and that's really the problem with a lot of these WWE characters. I know what they are, I just don't know why, and that's kind of a problem.
Sin Cara makes his ring entrance, and after a commercial break, Cody Rhodes has joined the commentary, or has joined Michael Cole on commentary, and Heath Slater makes his entrance for a third match of the night, kind of a surprise. Heath Slater defeating Sin Cara at 2 minutes and 36 seconds. They had all the Sin Cara lighting. He was totally in control. I mean, everything looked like it was going to go his way when Slater manages to slam him against the apron and just get a chance to take a break. The ref is yelling at Slater for what he did. Cody Rhodes leaves the announce table, grabs Sin Cara's mask, and spins it around backwards. Sin Cara stands up, starts reaching, trying to figure out what's wrong with his mask, which allows Slater to grab him and hit a DDT, a reverse DDT, for the pinfall victory. And then post-match, Cody jumps in the ring, attacks Sin Cara until some refs come and break it up. It leaves him kind of lying there. I am not a great fan of this feud because I don't think Sin Cara is working. I mean, he's still the same thing, and you know, he was hurt for so long, if you think about his total time in the ring and not just how long he's been with the company, it's really not been that long, and 6 months maybe, something like that, 6-7 months. And that's not, you don't have to have great involvement in your first 6 months, but we know he's been there, he's had the injury, and he's still just the same gimmick. I mean, they had the mood lighting and everything, it just irritates me at this point in his run. But as much as I dislike the feud, the crowd was chanting Cody sucks when this was over. And so maybe this is going to work. Maybe Sin Cara is over more than I thought. Or maybe Cody Rhodes is over even more than I thought. And I like Cody. But it didn't seem like a great feud, but the live crowd responded to it in Bakersfield, so maybe they've got something more here than I realized. Did you want to chant Cody sucks when this one was over?
Not really. I mean, I'm probably not the target audience for this feud. I think Sin Cara is definitely over among the younger fans, and I think, that's where they're targeting him. And I think the bullying that Cody Rhodes is doing to him, is something that is relatable to younger fans more so than it would be to adults. So I get why, you hear the childlike voices chanting Cody sucks at this angle, but for me, I'm with you. I don't think they've done enough with Sin Cara to get me really engaged in the character. And part of that is him. He hasn't always performed the best, and they lost some confidence in him along the way. And maybe he's started to rebuild that trust relationship with WWE. They're willing to put him into feuds like this, and I think that's a good thing because I think he is talented. But it's tough to at any point to get a really meaningful feud out of a guy who doesn't talk. So they're gonna have to do some things that are a little creative. And I think putting him with an animated, very over the top, verbally talented character like Rhodes is a good start. And maybe they will get something out of this eventually. But at this point, I think we're just hearing the Cody sucks chants from the kids because they relate to the Sin Cara character and the Cody Rhodes bullying more than maybe we do.
Is the caricature picture that Cody's walking around with, the one with the gigantic teeth and hair sticking out, I mean, is that doing damage to this? Like you said, he's over with the younger crowd, and maybe for that picture works for that crowd, but that seems to, like, I could get behind this a little bit more if they didn't have that picture. That picture, when he holds it up, to me, just screams, this is garbage, this is a fake story, this is, you know what I'm saying? That, like, that picture, I think, just kills it for older people, where, maybe it wouldn't be our favorite feud, but we could find a way to enjoy it, but they waggle that picture, and you go, this is garbage.
Yeah, I thought it was actually funnier when he said it verbally. Like I think that was the first promo or maybe it was the second one he cut. When he said he wanted to take the mask off to reveal, that Sin Cara, this troll-like figure with giant teeth and uneven ears. And I think it was that first promo where you mentioned how low of a blow it seemed to be because he said something like. Underneath the mask because there's nothing special about you or something like that. So
yeah,
I mean that part of it when he articulated it verbally was good, but the caricature drawing is definitely an eye roller for adult fans for sure.
Yeah, I like the little splash of yellow behind it, like his lighting. That's so ridiculous. After commercial, Sheamus is already in the ring, so we don't have to skip to his entrance a second time. Vicky does her introduction of Dolph and then joins Cole on commentary. And Vicky sat to his left. Most everybody sat to his right, and she sat to his left. And I noticed at the game when the primetime players were out, the headset that was to Cole's left was very, very, very quiet. I could barely hear Vicky at all whenever she was talking. I noticed later, again, with Titus O'Neil from the primetime players, that guy's loud. I mean, there's no question about that. So when you can barely hear him, you know there's something wrong with that headset. But she joins Cole on commentary for the fourth match of the night, Sheamus defeating Dolph Ziggler by disqualification at 5:03. Again, I would tell you more what Vicky said, but I had a hard time hearing her. There's a lot of clapping and breathless moments for her whenever Ziggler would do something good. But Sheamus is set up for the bro kick. Ziggler dives into the corner and holds onto the ropes to keep from getting kicked. Sheamus is trying to pull him out of the corner. The ref pushes him away. That allows Vicky to slide the briefcase to Ziggler. Ziggler turns around, whacks Sheamus with it, which causes the DQ. He doesn't care because he takes the opportunity. And I really like how he put him in the predicament. I don't know. I'm not saying we haven't seen this, but I don't remember seeing this with a Money in the Bank winner where he kind of, created his own moment by beating up the champion. But we get, Ziggler, hits him with the briefcase a couple more times. And then in what was the worst moment of the entire night, I think, we get Ziggler saying right now about 50 times to the referee, like the referee is some complete moron. You want to cash it in now? Right now. Now? Right now. Now? Right now. Now, he just kept going on and on and on, and when the ref goes over and has to explain to the timekeeper, I guess, it takes 45 minutes to explain that, this, right for real this time, like right now. He told me right now about 30 times. While they're having this conversation, Sheamus is able to recover. Ziggler sees it. He grabs the briefcase, slides out of the ring. He and Vicky leave. Vicky's laughing. They're pointing, yelling at Sheamus. I'll decide my time. Sheamus sells it pretty good or whatever. I liked what they did as a whole. But, again, just the 45-minute conversation with Ziggler trying to explain that, yes, he wanted to cash in now kind of killed this for me.
Yeah, that was bizarre. I mean, it was like a who's on first bit or something. I mean, it was just like the ref did not understand where he was going with it. And he's like holding the briefcase right in front of his face, like right now. And he's just staring at him with vacant eyes. Like, what is going on? But, the match itself was all right. I mean, these two always seem to put on a pretty good show. And, I was kind of merciful that we couldn't hear Vicky on commentary because she was mostly just shrieking at various, things happening in the ring. So maybe that was a blessing in disguise. But it was, I thought it was an effective segment. I thought the briefcase stall and the tease at the end were well done. And I do expect that we're going to see, Ziggler cash in sooner than later. I think they seem to be ramping up the teases at this point. That's usually a pretty good indication that, he's going to take whatever the next opportunity that presents itself is.
Yeah, I'm not the guy who remembers. My memory just works different than most people, I think, and maybe it's just a bad memory. I don't know, but do you remember any of the other previous winners, briefcase winners, kind of doing something like this where they created their own opportunity? I just seems like most everybody just appeared, after somebody else did it. And granted, he didn't actually cash in here, but I don't even remember a tease like this. Do you?
Nothing comes to mind immediately, no.
Okay, I really like that. I like how they kind of, they allowed Ziggler to create what could have been a moment for him, and then it wasn't. I thought it was, like I said, something different, and they tell a lot of stories with these briefcases, and it's been one of the better things that creative has done is telling stories with these Money in the Bank briefcases. So I just appreciated the effort there, even if the Corky, the referee, did seem to kill it kind of towards the end. That's a commercial. We get another Wade Barrett vignette. I cannot wait for him to debut, and hopefully the barrage thing dies pretty quickly because I just I hate it. I don't want to see it anymore, but hopefully it'll go away soon. And then we get to the part of the show where I'm going to try real hard. I even wrote this in my report. It's going to be real difficult to talk about this segment without just launching into this tirade and cursing like a sailor. Santino Marella makes his entrance. He cuts a Santino Marella promo about losing the U.S. title, how it, you know, ever since he lost it this week, it's becoming harder and harder for him to feel like an American, which is terrible because he likes feeling like American. For example, he woke up this morning and he'd forgotten what apple pie tasted like, so he ate an apple pie. And it's just, it's bad. It's not funny. It's not compelling. Even the crowd, which, you know, as a general rule, likes Santino a lot, wasn't responding much. He said that people had asked him everywhere he went if he and the Cobra could coexist and once again win the United States Championship. And he said, well, let's ask him. Let's find out right now. He pulled the sock out, which got a big pop from the crowds. And if any of you are listening that live in Bakersfield and you were there and you cheered for that sock, I hope you stubbed your toe and it hurts all day. I really do. He puts the sock on his hand. He kind of interviews or talks to the puppet or the snake or the whatever the hell it is. And you hear the reason why we lost, and the snake hangs its head. And then he goes, let me quote a famous Italian actor, Robert De Niro. I have nipples. Can you milk me? From one of the Fokker movies. I can't remember which one. He goes, no, I'm sorry, wrong quote. Well, the other famous Italian-American actor, Rocky, not Sylvester Stallone, he says Rocky. And then he gives the, you know, the Russia-USA speech from the end of Rocky IV. And it's so friggin' bad. Antonio Cesaro, we get music, and I'm like, who the hell is this? It's new music for Cesaro. Now, somebody emailed me and said they like this one less than the first music. I fundamentally disagree. This isn't great music, but it's not that cheesy Euro pop. It sounds like heel music. It fits him a little bit better. Not the end all be all of music, but just a mega improvement over that last garbage that he had. He comes out with Oksana onto the ramp and says he's going to say, you know, Oksana once again says he's going to say five words or a word in five different languages. The word is winner, and he even closed with it in French. And you know, I did you know the French had a word for winner? I didn't think. I mean, I knew they had a word for surrender, but I didn't know they had a word for winner.
It's the same word, really. I mean,
okay, that's it.
That
clears it up a lot. Santino says, "Oh no!" He rolls out of the ring, runs up to the ramp, starts attacking Cesaro. He actually gets the better of him. He's still got the Cobra sock on. He actually, you know, sets up the Cobra, hits his arm, does the whole thing, yells Cobra, acts like he's about to strike Cesaro, but the Cobra pulls him over to Oksana, who was making kissy faces at it. He fights with the Cobra, who seems very interested in Oksana, only to have Cesaro attack him from behind and beat him down. Oksana and Cesaro leave him lying there on the floor, on the stage. His own hand has turned against him, Jake. I cannot find words to express how friggin' stupid this is.
Yeah, it really is. It's kind of strange that Santino is probably, you know, one of the characters that they, you know, that they use most frequently to appeal to children, and yet they kind of make the Cobra into some kind of phallic joke regarding, you know, Oksana. I don't get that part of it, but you know, it's just bad. I mean, Cesaro deserves so much better, but I guess this is what he's going to have to deal with for the short term anyway. I hope it's over quickly for his sake, cuz it sure seems like they're going to have another title match out of this at Night of Champions in a couple of weeks. And I'm hoping that's the end of it.
For those people who were big Cesaro fans, and I am one of them, I mean, I loved him when he was Claudio Castagnoli in Ring of Honor and the Independent Circuit. And on one side, it's like so friggin' stupid. And I, again, because it's his hand. How the hell is his hand turning against Santino? It's just dumb. But The good news here is, I think if there's a silver lining to be found, it's this. McMahon apparently loves Santino and everything about him. And if Vince is putting Cesaro in a quote-unquote real, as much as it can be, feud with Santino, he's got high hopes for the guy. I mean, it's just the reality of the situation that, much like Daniel Bryan's goofy storyline right now, the fact that Cesaro was getting this much time with Santino is ultimately a good thing for him, in the sense of it's going to endear him to McMahon. Does that make sense, and do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, Santino has been, you know, a mainstay on the program, and he is the type of humor that Vince enjoys, and, you know, maybe not the rest of us all the time, but, you know, I don't see it necessarily as a bad thing that he's in a feud with Santino. I just think the subject matter of the feud in and of itself is pretty bad. I mean, I agree that, you know, it's probably a good sign that, you know, that Cesaro is picking up victories and you know, and getting into a major feud on television, even if we don't necessarily, you know, think it's as compelling as we would like it to be. He's getting a chance, and that's more than you can say for a lot of people who have come through.
Yeah, you're right. And it's not the most entertaining feud, but it's a feud, and it's a feud with a guy that McMahon likes, so it's good stuff for him. After commercial, we get the primetime players joining Michael Cole on commentary. And just real quick, the whole in and out with people on commentary was interesting for one night. I hope they don't, you know, I hope that wasn't a test run to see how people liked it, because I wasn't a huge fan of it. But I got to say, and this is where my whole thing is with the primetime players, is their gimmick is kind of dumb, their whole millions of dollars thing and whatnot. But when Cole did it and they were bagging on Cole for doing it, and then later when Cole tried to do that bark that Titus O'Neil does and they were picking up, when they are in, like, cut-down mode, when they are, you know, just ragging on people, I think they're entertaining. I find their shtick kind of funny, and I might be the only guy on staff or maybe in the world that finds them entertaining when they're like that. But when they start, you know, when Cole started doing millions of dollars and they just stopped and looked at it, it was like, what's wrong with you? You're worse than Rosa Mendez. You got no rhythm. I thought they were hilarious here, but maybe that's just me. They did mention Rosa, and that's because she was in the ring cussing at them in Spanish, I think, and there was Primo and Epico. Kofi Kingston and R-Truth out next for our fifth match of the night. Kofi Kingston and R-Truth defeating Epico and Primo at 2 minutes and 21 seconds. This one breaks down really fast. We get Kofi taking out Epico onto the floor. Primo tries to use the distraction to hit the backstabber on R-Truth, but Troop holds onto the ropes. And then hits the lie detector afterwards for the pinfall victory. No run in from the primetime players. The tag champions kind of point at them and yell from the ring. We do get more of this in just a minute. But, you know, it's not a lot to talk about the match here. It was a very quick match, 2-minute match. It was a setup for what happens after the trailer airs. But just real quick, I mean, you know, thoughts on the match. And am I alone on the primetime players? Do you find them engaging at all? I mean, I understand as a whole they're bad, but I just think I think about that and that silly moment backstage with Zeke that they had a few months ago, I think they can be entertained.
Yeah, I actually am in agreement with you. I took a lot of crap on the forums not that long ago for saying that I think they're improving, especially Darren Young, who when he was first part of the Nexus didn't seem to to be clicking, and now I think you know, spending as much time as he did in FCW and NXT and you know, with Titus, you know, I think they are starting to kind of come into their own. You know, I think Darren's improved quite a bit in the ring. Titus still has a ways to go there, but I think, you know, in certain situations on the microphone, like we saw tonight, if they're able to put them, you know, in a spot where they're, you know, where they're able to do that kind of frat boy trash talk kind of stuff, I think that is where they're the best. And, you know, if they can, you know, make sure to target them into situations like that, you know, I think they'll be okay. I don't think you want to send them out there to give a monologue in the ring. That'll just be a disaster. But if they can keep them, you know, in positions like this where they're able to just rip on people, I think they'll be a success, and, you know, until they get a little bit better on the microphone.
Yeah, I don't want to see them standing in the middle of the ring and cut that 3-minute promo. You know, backstage talking junk to R-Truth and Kofi Kingston, I think they've got something there at times. We get the trailer for The Day, the new WWE film that's coming out, and then we cut backstage to where Matt Stryker is interviewing the tag champs, ask them who they think is going to be the next contenders for the tag team championships. Both guys put over as it's not up to them, they don't care. Little Jimmy even offers his input, which R-Truth says that they don't worry about competition. Competition should worry about them, which Kofi just oversold and really liking that line. And the Primetown Players walk up at this point. Here they weren't as great, I didn't think. They were trying to bag on an imaginary character. I don't know how much luck you can have with that anyway, but they say that they should be the number one contenders, and then we get the Usos who walk up, and they say they should be the number one contenders. Epico and Primo run in, make their case. Tyson Kidd and Justin Gabriel run in. Jason Powell will be very happy about that. They come in, they make their case. Everybody's sitting there arguing. Kofi and Truth, in just kind of the weirdest moment of the night, they're standing there facing the camera, and they've got two teams on either side of them. The camera kind of pans back, and they're just standing there with their hands by their sides, staring at the camera, and then it was just a really weird visual for me. They just turn and throw punches. Truth hits the person closest to him. Kofi hits the person closest to him, and then a big ass brawl breaks out, and they brawl all the way to the commercial backstage. As I wrote in my slant in the report, I want to like this because I love tag team wrestling and. Having all, you know, they kind of established these are five teams that can be out there that it's our division and we can have a feud for the title, but it's coming on the heels of a 2-minute match, which again, if they're trying to set up, it's forgivable. You know, later we'll look back and go, well, that was fine. They had to do something to kind of get there, but it's the tag team division, and I just don't believe, as much as we hear about trying to revamp it, we see all these terrible moves they make. As much as I want to get excited about this, I don't have a reason to, because WWE has screwed me time and time again when it comes to tag team wrestling. Are you any more hyped up about it than I am?
You know, I do want to see the tag team division succeed. I mean, they really haven't. I mean, despite their numerous insistence that, they're trying to rebuild it and putting effort into it, you know, it still really hasn't taken off the ground yet. And I think, you know, in order for that to happen, they're going to need to put the titles on an actual team. I think the idea of singles wrestlers moving into the division and forming teams and is okay if you need temporary star power, but in the long run, they're going to need to build that division around teams. And thus far, they've kind of put together, a couple of teams around the champs, but they really haven't given them the character definition or, you know, the meaningful wins in the ring to make them feel important, and it's a struggle because they really don't have a lot of teams that could make another team feel important with a win. So they're just going to need to do what happened in the late 90s in the tag division, where they just let these teams go out there and wrestle longer matches and build some drama for themselves. It just doesn't feel like WWE is willing to do that at this point, which is a shame. So I'm not entirely confident we're going to see some resurgence of the tag division right now, but this at least gives you hope that they're going to have at least these four teams trying to get that number one contender spot for Night of Champions, which isn't a bad thing.
Yeah, I'm guardedly hopeful at this point. I refuse to get invested and just get crushed again by WWE. But when you see something, you want to try to latch onto it. So I'm guardedly hopeful going forward. After commercial, we've got Booker T backstage. He was on the phone. Teddy Long walks up and he turns to Teddy and he says, "Teddy, I need your help. We got all these teams fighting for the demanding to be the number one contenders. I got to figure out who should be the number one contender. Who do you think?" And And Teddy says, you know, I don't know, Booker. It's, you know, that's not really my, that's your decision. And he says, you know, you're my advisor. I need you to advise me on this. Who do you think it would be? And Teddy again, you know, kind of tap dances. And, well, I don't want to tell you the wrong thing. I just don't know, Booker. Eve walks in at that point, steps right in between them. She's got a portfolio notebook in her hand and a piece of paper. She hands Booker the portfolio and says, here you go. I took all the teams. I did some research. I went back and found all the tag team one-loss records for, I think she said for a certain period of time, but I missed it. You know, so along with some ideas about who you should, you know, consider putting as the number one contender. Then she hands him the paper. She goes, I also organized your meetings and everything for the next 2 weeks that you don't have to worry about figuring out when you're meeting with the board and that sort of thing. And Booker seemed shocked, and she said, oh, I take my job as your assistant very serious. And he said, wow, well, you know, well, what do I say? Let me go look over this. Teddy, you handle your business. Eve, you definitely handle yours. And he left. Eve was all smile. She turns around, and there's Teddy. She goes, oh, Teddy, I didn't even see you there. And she walked off grinning and leaving Teddy there looking pissed off. My loathing of the Teddy Long character is well documented, and I hate to see him in any angle whatsoever because I don't think he's a compelling character. But I kind of like this. I like Eve, and I think she's been much, much better as a heel than she ever was as a babyface, and she was just starting to find her stroke with John Laurinaitis, and then they cut the legs out from underneath that story, and needed to. Johnny Ace had run his course. But I like this nebulous. I didn't like the diva thing so much, but I thought this worked out well, and her coming in and doing the job and brown-nosing and kind of replacing Teddy, and probably worming her way into a title shot eventually, I kind of liked it.
Yeah, you know, she's different as a heel, and she does she does a pretty good job, you know, being the fraudulent brown noser. You know, she's very good at putting on a fake smile and doing that bit. So this part, it worked for me. You know, I'm not a huge fan of spending a lot of time on Teddy Long either. But I think if it furthers what they're doing with Eve, then it makes sense. You know, she's definitely one of the better actresses they have, as far as females go in WWE. So it's nice to see her, get the attention that she deserves, because it was a shame that her assistant GM character, whatever that was with Laurinaitis, had to go away abruptly with his regime. So, you know, it's nice to see them kind of pick up where they left off, because I think this character, of all of her characters, has the most promise.
Michael Cole hyped anger management for Daniel Bryan on Monday's Raw. I can only imagine what that's going to be. And then we get the video recap of Paul Heyman and Shawn Michaels saying what they had to say about Triple H on Monday, as well as Lesnar's tout saying that that he's leaving WWE. Orton makes his ring entrance into the commercial, and that when we come back, Sheamus is on commentary. Del Rio makes his ring entrance with Ricardo Rodriguez, finally with the full music and whatnot. For our sixth and final match of the night, your number one contenders match, main event, Alberto Del Rio defeating Randy Orton in 10 minutes and 37 seconds. We talked about this earlier. Again, the finish coming kind of a surprise when Del Rio hooks the cross arm breaker on Orton after working the arm for a good part of the match. Orton fights to keep from having it locked in, but finally Del Rio gets it, stitches it back, and Orton taps right in the middle of the ring, and we get the big moment where I'm just kind of sitting there staring at the television wondering if that really just happened. But it did. We get the tap out. Post-match, Sheamus jumps into the ring. Oh, no, excuse me. Del Rio's in the ring with Ricardo celebrating. He shoves Ricardo down, takes Ricardo's shoe off, and throws it at Sheamus. That incites Sheamus. Sheamus runs, jumps into the ring, attacks Del Rio, but the numbers game is too much for him. Ricardo and Del Rio beat up Sheamus, leave him lying in the middle of the ring. At that point, Ziggler's music hits. He comes down and jumps in the ring, starts to cash in. The referee, a little more aware of what's happening at this point, and starts to take the briefcase. I'm sorry. When Randy Orton jumps in, hits the RKO to close the show. You know, not a whole lot more to say about this. Again, I like the finish with Orton hitting the RKO, able to get a little bit of his heat back there, and Ziggler's no worse the wear for it. But, you know, really the only moment of the show that was exciting. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the tap out was a great moment for Del Rio. And, you know, I wish more, you know, superstars would be willing to do the tap. You know, I think WWE, and Jason mentioned this, and I agree with him, has kind of done themselves a disservice by, you know, by doing the whole "you tapped out" bit. You know, MMA has, you know, when they talk about somebody tapping out on commentary, they talk about it, you know, as them preserving their career. You know, a permanent injury can sideline you for months. I wish WWE would take tapping out, you know, take that approach to it, where, you know, you get caught, you know, it can happen to anybody. You tap out and you move on. You know, you move on to the next match. And the stigma that's attached to it in WWE is kind of a shame, because I think it's a good way to end matches. And I think it since a lot of WWE heels use submission moves, you know, Bryan and Del Rio in particular, you know, people could benefit. Even Punk has the Anaconda Vice and used the Koji Clutch. So I think tapping out, you know, could see a bit of a resurgence, but I hope they take a better approach to it this time around.
Yeah, I do find it interesting that they have Orton tap after Hunter taps at SummerSlam. We get the "you tapped out" chant, and then we get,
and
you
Big
know,
Show
Heyman. I'm sorry?
And Big Show tapped, I mean, when he was in the Koji Clutch STF combination.
Well, that's true, yeah. Of course, it was both guys on there, but specifically, they do, you know, they do the angle with Hunter, and then they come back on Raw, and Heyman makes a big deal out of it. I mean, he uses that "you tapped out" chant really to kind of, you know, beat up on Triple H a little bit more by saying that he quit, you know, by tapping out, he quit. He quit on his family, he quit on the company. You know, they go through this whole big deal about him quitting, you know, because of tapping out, and then they turn right around and have Orton tap out. It's kind of interesting when you put those things together in a line that it's surprising. But that's your SmackDown audio review. Jake, you have anything to add before we get out of here?
No, I think we covered everything.
And let me go ahead and give a big public happy birthday to Jake's daughter. She is 2 years old today, so congratulations on her for surviving 2 years without getting killed by her parents. I remember my first one, the first 2 years is certainly troubling, but this year is going to be wild. You just fly those terrible twos or something else. Jake and I will be back next week for another SmackDown audio review. If you're liking what you hear, there's tons of audio on our site exclusive to our members. You've got all the audio we produce each week. Again, Jason Powell got together with former WWE creative member Court Bauer. They spoke for a little over an hour this week about SummerSlam and Raw and the state of WWE as a whole. My 27-minute interview with Ring of Honor World Champion Kevin Steen is also up. Have another big interview coming next week. Supposed to be one Friday. It didn't quite work out. There was timing issues. But hope to have that for the first of next week. Should be a lot of fun. So it's a great time to become a .NET member. All you got to do is head over to ProWrestling.net, click on that .NET member sign-up link on the right-hand side of the page. $7.50 for your first 30 days if you take the monthly option, but I would recommend go ahead getting that annual option, only $5.50 a month when you sign up that way. Great stuff coming. Night of Champions coming up in a few weeks. Looks like it's going to be CM Punk and John Cena. As we build to that, be sure to get all your news right here at ProWrestling.net. Thank you so much for listening today. Thank you for your continued support of the .NET site. We will see you guys back next week. Check out Pro Wrestling Evo tonight on iPay-Per-View, EvoOnDemand.com. Until then, everyone, take care.